Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reddy Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie. Reduce your price, not your cover.
On Sunshine 106.8.
This is the ball of Tiger Woods.
Burn, this is extremely difficult. This is one of the toughest pitches on the entire place here.
Well, here it comes. Oh, my goodness.
A very good morning. I'm Ken Doherty.
And I'm Reggie Corrigan. And welcome to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. We'll be kicking off with the papers this morning in racing. We'll be chatting to George McDonough, racing pundit and Over the Line show co-host, as he previews this weekend's races and shares with us his lucky 15. And in GAA, Declan Drake will be in studio with former Dublin minor and under 21 manager and former Ballantyre senior hurling manager Sean Lane. Sean will be giving his analysis of this year's Dublin Hurling Championship, which ended in defeat to Cork last Saturday. And in football, Alan Cawley will look back at the Europa League action, plus all of the League of Ireland. Loads going on in the rugby. I'm going to be talking to Shane Byrne, former Ireland Leinster and, of course, British and Irish Lion, about the third and final test of the Lions Tour. It really was a tough one for the Lions last week, getting well beaten in the end by South Africa. So we'll see, can they bounce back this week? And as our guest this week, we're delighted with the day that's in it, the day before Kelly Harrington, of course, fights for gold, to be talking to Irish Olympic boxer Michael Carruth as he shares his thoughts on this year's games and some memories of what it's like to be in a gold medal fight like that. So as always, you can get in touch with us on the show by texting us on 087 11 55 777 or WhatsApp us on 087 188 1068. And of course, don't forget, we're on Facebook, Dublin's Talking Sport, Twitter at Sport 1068 and Instagram, Dublin's Talking Sport. Now, you heard him there at the intro. He's sitting back in here in the studio with me. Great to have him back. Good morning, Ken. Welcome back.
Good morning, Reg. It's good to be back. Yeah, and things have changed around here since I was last there. I would say there's more buildings going up.
Yeah, there's about 14 office blocks now surrounding the area that weren't here when you were here the last time. Yeah, they're fairly shooting up in the area, all right. It's changed a lot, I'm sure.
How are you? You're looking well in any way.
Yeah, great
fit
form.
Fit as a butcher's dog.
Absolutely, yeah. Never better. Feeling great, enjoying everything that's going on. Yeah, propping up this thing here in the chair while you've been off gallivanting, but it's been good, really good.
You're doing a great job.
Thanks, Andrew. I was dying for that bit of praise.
that's the only praise you get this morning.
That's it, I'm done. How's everything been with you? You've been going great.
Good.
Of course, is it the British Open coming up next week?
Yeah, I got the Championship League and British Open as well coming up over the next week and a half. Wednesday starts again, and then, of course, British Open be on ITV from Monday. So, yeah, looking forward to that. But can't wait for tomorrow morning, 6 o'clock in the morning, Kelly Harrington. I'm really excited about it, I must say.
It's unbelievable. There hasn't been the kind of level of excitement. Now, I know the rowers did brilliantly and everything else, but I don't think there was quite the same build-up for them. I don't know, it just came out a little bit out of nowhere with them, whereas with Kelly, there's been the build-up all week, and I suppose we were delighted with bronze, now we're delighted with silver, but everybody's kind of hoping that maybe there can be a gold medal in the making, and it kind of brings you back to when Katie used to be in those situations.
Yeah, Katie, and of course, hopefully we'll get Michael Carruth on as well to find out his thoughts. And of course, you know, going into that, you know, final, it's going to be so exciting, and particularly for our family, you know, and everybody, you know, from our area as well. I see all the bunting up, all the flags up and everything, you know, and it's going to be so exciting. I know we're going to be listening to Jane was down there.
Yeah, she was down in Kelly Harrington country yesterday chatting to some of the neighbours in Portland Row about the feeling of the big fight. Let's have a little listen to what Jane was talking to them about.
Every morning that Kelly fights, the place must be on wheels. People come from all over the country. I actually met a Kerry couple today that asked me where Kelly lives, and the place is literally buzzing.
She's down Ireland proud, and our mother and father proud, and everyone around the area. Portland Close, North Strand, Clarendon Street, the whole lot, everyone's supporting her. She's some support around the whole area, you know.
She was always into the boxing, always wanted to go into boxing. When she turned about 16, we knew from then she'd go far. Kelly was always there. Like, if you wanted to talk to Kelly, like, Kelly would be always there for you. Just have to ring her and she'd come out and have a talk with you. She was brilliant for that. Mm-hmm. Brilliant. great girl.
It's like these back to the Italian 90 when the World Cup was on and there's a great atmosphere around the place. So hopefully she brings back gold, but sure, if she doesn't, she's done everybody proud in anyway.
Hope she does well and comes back with the gold medal, because it's been another hero, because we've also Troy Parra, who's playing for Ireland, only 18 years of age, and hoping he will do well for the road.
A Kerry couple asking where she lived. What were they doing? Who let them in here? No, it's brilliant. We can hear it in everybody's voices there, how excited they are about it. And, you know, one of the people there in the interview saying how down to earth and normal Kelly is. And that really comes across in all of her interviews and also in the way that she's very grounded.
She's very grounded, yeah. Very level headed. And as I say, even if you don't know Kelly Harrington, listening to her in her interviews, you know, she's just very nice. And she, you know what I mean? You
can, absolutely.
You sort of, you have a certain affinity with her, you know, just like listening to her voice. And she's fantastic. And, you know, it's great excitement for everybody down there in Portland Row. And of course, you know, as I said, I saw all the bunting up and all the flags up. So they'll be all, you know, up at 6 o'clock in the morning. It's going to be really exciting for them. And I just hope, fingers crossed and toes crossed, that everything, that she's going to get the gold medal.
Me too, yeah. Well, we're going to be talking to Michael Carruth a little bit later on in the show, more about the Kelly Harrington fight and what to expect from that. So we can talk to him a little bit more about that. It was disappointing yesterday for Natalia Coyle. Some very, very emotional and hard to watch scenes on RTE last night. She was heartbroken, and it's modern pentathlon. It's such a weird sport. I mean, it's gas can. I don't know about you, but I've noticed that everybody in Ireland has become an expert, and they always do around the Olympics around every sport. So now everybody's, you know, a horse critic, and they're a pentathlon expert, and they're giving out about the fact that the horses are not up to the standard, or they're not good enough, and this, that, and the other, and they haven't got a clue how it all works, nor do I. But it was very, very sad to see Natalia Coyle. She basically, it's a lottery as to what horse you get.
Yeah.
And she got a horse that didn't want to jump, and it destroyed her chances. Yeah, and I mean, you know, this is her third Olympics. She's fought so hard to get there and was sitting in a good position to fight for medals at that point. It does seem very unfair that it'd be like firing you a different cue, you know, or making me play soccer.
Yeah. It's and I've seen you play soccer as well, so
I do that wouldn't be a good idea.
It's a bit of a lottery, you know. I feel sorry for you. You know, like we talked about it last week, you know, it's every 4 years, you know, and there's such a build up for it, there's so much preparation goes into it, and you know, it can be heartbreaking, you know. It can be, you know, the jubilation of the likes of Kelly Harrington on the other end of the scale, but it can be heartbreaking as well. And you know, my heart goes out to her, and it's just it's very sad, but that's just the way it is, you know.
It has been an Olympics of surprises. There's been quite interesting results. Great Britain have done very, very well. I watched the 4x100 meter sprint final last night, and it was amazing. And the Italians, they did it again to England. They beat them again on the line, and put an amazing run from the last leg. Just came up and just caught the British athlete on the line in what was a fantastic race. But very noticeable as well that, you know, you'd imagine the likes of China and America would be dominating these particular things. And they weren't even in the medals. USA, did they even qualify for the final? I don't think they did.
Yeah.
Canada were there. I think they got third place. It's funny, this Olympics, there does seem to be different nationalities. See, there was a Dutch guy as well.
I think that's the great thing about the Olympics, isn't it? There's certain sports and that certain countries sort of revel in, you know, and they're very, very good in, and that's what makes the Olympics so special, you know, that it's a little bit more spread around. You know, you still have the, you know, the dominant countries like China dominating a lot of medals, USA of course as well, Great Britain are well up there, even Japan are, you know, getting a lot of medals, but at the same time, even Ireland are going to get medals, and, you know, like other countries around the world are going to get medals. And that's the great thing about the Olympics, that certain countries are dominant in certain sports, and it's great for them to receive medals as well. The only thing I'd say about the Olympics is it's so strange, isn't it? You know, there's no crowds or anything like that. Like, you can imagine, like, packed arenas and stuff like that, like the way it was and, you know, in Olympics gone by. And that's what we're really missing, you know. And it's just, it's hard to watch as well on the TV. It doesn't take away the excitement for us, but you can imagine for the athletes.
Ah, yeah. There's nothing like you know it with snooker. Yeah. I can't imagine. You
well, know, nobody watched me, and anyway, so it didn't make it wouldn't make any difference to me, Rich.
Yeah, well,
at least you had a crowd down at watching you with Leinster in Ireland. You know,
well, in the preseason matches, we wouldn't have had too many, and in the early days, there weren't too many. There was one man and his dog at the Interpro, but the dog did most of the show,
and the dog was asleep.
but it must be very, very hard. But it's funny that you're saying about the medals and anybody been able to get them and,
yeah,
you know, the Olympics. San Marino, there's a piece in the Irish Times there this morning. San Marino, I think only has 30 or 40,000. they have 3 medals, you know.
That's brilliant, isn't it?
Trap shooting.
That's a great thing, yeah.
Wrestling, and I don't know what the other sport was, but, you know, they got medals, and it says in the article, that's a medal for every 11,000 or so San Marino
that's
natives.
That's fantastic.
So there you go.
Yeah, there you go.
So it is something that can be spread out evenly amongst countries, even that, you know, you mightn't expect to. So, yeah, I mean, I think Ireland overall for this Olympics are disappointed. The feedback that it seems to be coming back, I know, certainly in the equestrian, there was a lot of people seemed to be annoyed about how it all went or how it unfolded. Yeah. Some of the rule decisions and that yesterday seemed to go against Ireland. Obviously, Natalia Coyle would have been expected maybe to be
Kian O'Connor as well, of course. Yeah,
Kian O'Connor didn't go great. Mm. You know, the rowers did very well, but Aidan Walsh did great, but then got injured before he could fight in the next round. So, like, it was disappointing for that. But overall, I think it's been a strange Olympics, as you said, and the build-up and the training and the lack of preparation has to have had an effect. So I suppose it's not really about the medals, it's just about how we can kind of see our athletes progress.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, when the over 50s in snooker comes into the Olympics, you know, or maybe the over 60s, Reg, I might, you know, we might have a chance.
You might never know.
we'll have a game of doubles. There might be a doubles, you know, you could be my partner. Yeah, you can break off.
I'm getting as good as you know these days, the way things are going.
Absolutely.
What about Messi? That was a bit of a strange one, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. He's coming to United. He's on the way.
Arsenal. I saw a picture of him in an Arsenal jersey there this morning.
I can't wait. Yeah. Now it's quite strange.
Will he come to England?
I doubt it. Mm. I mean, it looks like PSG are already in negotiations with him. I don't know. Is it the rule in the Spanish league, La Liga, with, you know, with the salary cap and stuff like that has a lot to do with it?
No, it's to do with the trouble that Barcelona have gotten themselves into.
They're almost bankrupt.
Yeah, they're almost bankrupt. But because of that, I think La Liga stepped in and a ruling was made that they had to keep within a certain budget. Mm. And apparently Messi's wage alone kills the budget.
Yeah.
So they went back and they looked at it and they went 50% of his salary, and that still wasn't enough.
Yeah.
So, you know, basically they would have been in breach of the new restrictions that was brought in against them. So they were left with no choice, even if somebody wanted to step in, which I'm sure there would have been plenty of people who would with the money and make up the money. Because what they were trying to do as well, they were trying to do a thing whereby he played for less money, but he became an ambassador for the rest of his life, and then he was getting a fee for the rest of his life.
Or get sponsorship or something like that.
Exactly.
And make it
the
up.
League
yeah. Well, this is where the financial fair play rule, I think, lets a lot of clubs down around the world, and particularly in Europe. And we've seen it already with Manchester City. You know, they got away with it. They were under investigation, and they were under that financial fair play rule. And then this week, they've already signed, you know, Grealish, you know, for 100 million. Yeah, so it sort of makes a mockery of that financial fair play rule.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Completely. There's ways around it. There's loopholes and everything, and it'll be the same with PSG if he goes there. And it's the same with Barcelona and Real Madrid over the years as well. So
how can Grealish be worth 100 million, Ken? How can he be worth 100 million? I mean, he came on, I know, in the Euros and made impressions, but he wasn't even in the starting lineup. If you think about it, he was always the impact player.
How much of an impact is he going to make on Manchester City? You know, because they've got they've got Sterling, they've got Mahrez. Yeah. He may not be getting his game every week, but at that price, you would think he'd have to.
100 million.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Crazy.
300,000 a week, Red. Yeah, almost what you're on in here, you know, with Dublin's Talking Sport.
Absolutely, I know. But I mean, look, I'm worth it. He's not. That's the bottom line. Yeah, yeah. Harry Kane.
I mean, he's a fantastic player. He is brilliant to watch.
A brilliant player. I'm just talking 100 million.
He's very exciting. He's very, very exciting. You know, he's got lots of tricks and stuff like that. But what does he do? I mean,
well, he did make an impression and he did change the games in those Euros. There's no question about that. When he came on, there was a lift in the team and there was a buzz around him and the players seemed to react very well to him. So I was very impressed with him in the Euros. But then again, I was impressed with Pogba in the Euros and look how crap he is for United.
Don't you say anything about Pogba now on this show. Listen.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, when the mic is off, you do nothing but give out about him. But yeah, I just don't get the 100 million for Grealish thing. But what about Harry Kane? He seems to have made a bit of a mess as well.
I mean, imagine if he goes to Manchester City as well, you know, for another 100 million or 150 million, whatever he's looking for.
I thought it was funny when the Messi thing was announced, all of a sudden Kane is back putting out press releases and Twitter and saying, I'd never do anything against the club that I love, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. All of a sudden Messi's on the market.
Where will Messi go? Where do you think he'll go?
I'd say PSG. I don't think... Like,
wouldn't it be great for him though to come to the Premiership? I mean, you know, for us watching every week could be fantastic.
Is there, you were saying financial fair play, I don't know. Is there a ruling to say that they can't spend X amount of money? Could City, with all their oil money, turn around and give 100 million to Messi?
I think they're the only ones that can actually afford him.
But would they be allowed to do that on top of the Grealish one?
I don't think so. I really don't think so. And okay. I mean, I don't think it would be viable. I don't think it's allowed. And unless, again, there is some loophole that they can jump through, but I couldn't see it. But they're probably the only team in the Premiership that could actually afford him.
You know,
a million a week is quite... He's earned 450 million over the last 3 years in salary, you know?
It's mad stuff. Would he still not be happy. Would he make a big impression, do you think? Like, I actually, not just saying, joking aside, he's still not happy. I actually thought... like Messi might just turn around and go, do you know what, I'll play for 10 million a year and just finish out my career with Barcelona. It's my club, that's it. Because he doesn't need the money.
He doesn't need the brand. Money, no. He might go to America. Yeah, but
would you not think, I don't know.
I would.
Do you not think he should just bite the bullet and finish it out with Barcelona?
It's not about money now. Yeah,
it's not about money, you know.
It shouldn't be, you know what I mean? Yeah. It really shouldn't be. I mean, he loves the game, I'm sure. You know, you see him week in, week out. He's always giving his all. And it shouldn't be about money, you know.
I just don't know how he can go and leave Barcelona after, what is it, 21 years, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a legacy. He's left a legacy.
I can't envisage him in another jersey, and I can't see how he would want to leave that when money doesn't matter, you know. Like, he could just play it out and be... like, imagine what a hero you'd be for the rest of your life and the legacy you're talking about if you decided, okay, I'm going to play for the next 2 years for nothing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And just work off his endorsements and everything else. He's not going to be poor out of it.
I think that would be the more admirable thing to do.
Wouldn't it?
Yeah. I mean, he's not going to come to Bray Wanderers anyway, you know.
No. He wouldn't get on
the electricity. Can forget about that, you know. But I think he might stay there. They'll find some way of trying to keep him. Or he'll go to PSG, but, you know, Premiership would be fantastic for the rest of us to see him there.
Yeah, absolutely. GA, we're going to be talking to Declan Drake a little bit later on as well. And Sean Lane will be in studio too to have a chat about everything that's great hurling on this weekend, the two semi-finals. And of course, the Dubs, Ken, in the semis again next week against Mayo. Jane, our producer from Mayo, she's got this sort of a feeling that somehow or other Mayo are actually going to come up and make a game of it. I don't know what she's on about, but it seems like the same old story again.
I tell you what, I'm loving our Vox spots. You know,
she's brilliant at that.
Interviews and I really.
But she won't be doing any down around Mayo, that's for sure. Talking to them about the great success they had against the Dubs.
I mean, it's going to be a tough match. I don't think the Dubs are as formidable as they were, you know, over the past few seasons, you know. But however, when the crunch comes, I think they do step up to the mark, you know, and they've got some great quality and depth as well as, you know, on the field, and they're going to be hard to stop. But Mayo, of all the teams, they're one of the, you know, Mayo and Kerry, I think, they've been knocking on the door so many times. So yeah, it's gonna be an interesting semi final. I'm really excited about what's in store, and also to hear what Declan Drake has to say about the inside track and what's happening with Stephen Cluxton. Is there any word about him at all?
Nobody knows.
Ring us here, Dublin's Talk Spot. Give Jane a little interview, will you? And let us know what you're doing.
Yeah, well, I think he's just keeping his head down, and
he's been brilliant,
perfectly
hasn't he?
Entitled. Yeah,
he's exactly. One of the best.
He's been the best
footballers
servant.
That we've ever had.
Well, certainly, you know, for longevity, yeah. Yes, there's no question about it. For success rate, you'd have to say yes, indeed, he is. You know, there'd probably be some that would argue there might be more talented skill-wise footballers, let's say, but as goalkeepers
but as a goalkeeper,
go...
I mean, his kicking is just
absolutely
insane,
they,
isn't
they
it?
They created a whole game plan around it, you know? So
he's almost sort of changed the way sort of GAA is played.
Well,
you know,
did.
From the back
when
almost.
They did that, when they first brought out that kick-out style, it did completely change it. There's no question about it. No, there's no doubt. He's been an amazing servant for Dublin. It'd be just nice if it all finished on a nice note, if everybody knew what was going on.
He deserves that as well.
Yeah, he does deserve that. But, I mean, look, he's entitled to do it his way. So, best of luck to him. I'm sure we'll find out in time. But look, that's all we have time for in the papers. We're going to be talking to Michael Carruth very, very shortly about Kelly Harrington and that wonderful bid for a gold medal. 6 o'clock in the morning. We'll have to get up for that one, Kent. Definitely have to get up for that one. I'm looking forward
to bed.
Yeah, of course you're not. I think you need a few hours. All right, we're going to take a break now. When we come back, we'll be talking to Michael Carruth. Don't go away. And you're welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sports with me, Reggie Corrigan, and Ken Doherty here in studio with us on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. You can get in touch with us on the show here by texting us on 087 11 55 777 or WhatsApp us on 087 188 1068. Well, you heard from the clip there, Michael Carruth, our gold medalist, of course, joining us on the line now to talk about the wonderful Kelly Harrington. Good morning, Michael. How are you?
Good morning, lads. How are you?
Oh, we're going great. We're really, really excited about this. I mean, Kelly, I suppose there was great hopes going into this Olympics for Kelly, and there was loads of chat beforehand of it, but that's all very well. It doesn't really matter. It's when you get to the business end of things and you have to get out there, and we've seen so many of our athletes struggle to get to that point. Here she is with a silver medal in around her neck and a really, really good chance of getting a gold tomorrow morning.
Yeah, absolutely, and as you said, like the pressure was on her because she's ranked number one in the world at the moment, you know. So you know, it's an awful burden sometimes as well having that on you, you know. So, but she's after doing everything to the letter of the law in relation to her fights and things like that. She's winning fights, and she's not getting into wars. She's not getting any injuries. We hope there's no injuries. But with that, she's boxed perfectly up to here, you know, so this is going to be one tough fight. Now, I'm calling this 50-50, this fight with the Brazilian and Kelly, because it's, you can't call it. You really can't call this fight, you know what I mean? So, if I was to box the Brazilian now tomorrow, I would be on my feet, I'd be on my toes, I wouldn't be getting into a brawl with this one, you know what I mean? I would be designed to try to pick her off, get her shots, don't get pushed back too much either, try to keep the centre of the ring. And she can do that because Kelly has a great ability of boxing, you know, southpaw and orthodox. She's a switch hitter, and she's as good either either way, you know. So she's gonna have to bamboozle this Brazilian one, and you know, again, she's gonna have to fight the fight of her life to become the Olympic champion. But if there anybody you'd want to do it, it would be her, you know.
Yeah, well, Beatrice Ferreira is the Brazilian. She's seeded too. As you said, she's a tough opponent to fight. 50-50. I did hear a lot of talk during the week. Everybody comes an expert around the Olympic times, Michael.
Of course, yeah.
So I was listening to a lot of people and they were talking about the tactical,
including you, Reg,
including me. They were talking about the tactics that Kelly uses and how good she is at that, and that this fight, you know, will be for the purists. It'll all be about picking off punches and you know, just racking up points rather than going for the big killer blow, let's say.
Exactly, yeah. But she has to be busy as well, Kelly, you know. They're not going to give it to her if she keeps dancing away. you know, on the back foot. You know, sometimes judges just reward aggression, and I don't think it should ever be aggression. Shouldn't be rewarded. Skill should be rewarded. You know, and but that's judges. You know, you see red, I see blue. That's the next part of it. You know what I mean? She's been on the good end of a 3-2 decision this week with the Thailand boxer. You know, and that could have gone any way, and you couldn't have really argued if it went to the Thailand boxer. You know what I mean? But thankfully, it went to her Irish boxer. You know, so yeah, it's gonna be a game. It's the old cliche, and everybody's been saying it. The first round is huge. You know, whoever wins this first round is going to be looking very comfortable for winning the fight. You know what I mean? So I know that's crazy in its own right, but you know, judges tend to stay together when it's a vote for one girl, and all of a sudden all the rest there to kind of stay together on it. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, but saying that, Kelly won the first round against the Thailand boxer, she lost the second round. And then she pipped the third round, you know what I mean? So she does that again with the big parties going on everywhere in Dublin and Ireland tomorrow, we hope. You know? Yeah. So
Give us the mindset, Michael. I mean, when you cast your mind back to 1992, was it when you won the gold? What was your mind like going into that final? You know, how will Kelly be feeling as well going into this final tomorrow? I mean, excitement, you know, all different emotions going through your mind.
Yeah, listen, come here. You're going to be scared as hell as well, you know.
What was it like for you when you were going into that final?
Well, yeah. Well, the thing with it was, I was very good at taking pressure off myself, yeah. You know. And you know, everybody was asking me how was I going to beat this Cuban. You know, I said he's 6'3". You know, both my hands were broken, which we didn't know. But we couldn't release that. You know what I mean? I said, how the hell am I going to hit him? Never mind beat him, I said. You know what I mean? And I took a bit of pressure on myself. He's expected to beat me. And that's the way I looked at it. Like, he's expected to win, not me. Yeah. You know? So I'm going to do everything in my power not to let him win this. You know what I mean? So, and that's what I'm doing. I love fighting southpaws. That was one great thing, because I'm a southpaw myself. You know? And it was a case of me getting him under pressure as quick as I could. Mm-hmm. And I did. I won the fourth round, and he's 1 point down after the fourth round. All of a sudden, you hear the hysteria from the Irish supporters when they see him the score. Yeah. And he's going to himself, this is not supposed to be happening. I'm not supposed to be letting this little Irish man beat me. And then we went in the second round, and it was all even. I got a public warning for holding, and which meant I gave him 3 points. So the bottom line was out. But I was still winning punching-wise. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, and again, my mindset was probably that I'm not supposed to win this. You know what I mean? Yeah, there's no chance of me winning this.
You had a free roll almost. You were on a sort of, you know.
Yeah, I could do what I wanted. You know what I mean? And I just, you know, we I did stick to the plan. The plan was for me to box on the back foot, you know, for him to come to me. Because he's so tall, Ken. You've seen how big he was. I tried to jump to be higher than him. You know what I mean? But the plan was for me to let him come to me. And I'm a natural southpaw counterpuncher, you know. And it came down to one thing. His right hand was the fastest, and mine was, you know. Yeah, and I was catching with the right hook. Now, Kelly is going to be fighting this girl again tomorrow. Kelly has the, you know, as I said, the attributes to with the left or right hook. She can turn southpaw also. But whatever he's saying to her is do the simple things, you know. It has to be a straight jab. You have to win ugly. Win. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's not about performing like you and you have to get a 1-4-7 break every time. You know what I mean? It's about winning, you know, getting over the line. And that's all the finals are about, is getting over the line. Yeah. And if she gets over the line, as I said, we're going to party like nobody else has party. You know what I mean? So because she becomes the first female from Dublin to win an Olympic gold medal. You know what I mean? I'm the first male to win an Olympic gold medal. So it's going to be great for her, the community. And you know, as she's mentioned numerous times, that, you know, what's going on in the world at the moment, we need something to, you know, cheer us up. And we definitely, this needs to cheer us up. But no matter what happens tomorrow as well, Kelly Harrington is a champion. And that's the bottom line. She is a true champion.
Well, you mentioned there how important it has been to our community, Michael. Jane got a few words from Christy Harrington yesterday. Let's have a little listen to that.
Okay, Louis. I can remember Kelly phoning me from Ireland, one of the competitions she was at. And she actually fought Natasha Jones. She was thrown in the deep end. And she was only beaten 13-9. And she phoned me that day, and she was devastated. Absolutely devastated. And that was the foundation for her. I said, well, I'll come back, don't I get that girl? And she did. Kelly always got back up. Kelly always. But she was always looking for people to make her better. She knew what she needed to do. But she needed people
to bring her through the journey.
Yeah.
And she eventually found him. So much pride, so much joy. It's just everything. Just me. I miss the world. That's what it means.
Yeah, you can hear it there, how proud in his voice and the emotion coming through there with Christy. But, you know, for the whole community, and I suppose you can hear Christy saying it there, and Kelly's been the first to say it, they're very quick to credit the coaching staff and the setup that's been around her and the process that got her to where she is today.
Yeah, listen, the whole performance, you know, was a thing that, you know, frankly, it was involved in Ireland, because, you know, we were all basically, you know, like when me and Wayne McCulloch boxed in 92, he had a job as a caretaker, something down in the hospital. I was in the army. You know, we didn't have, you know, what they have now, and it's right what they have now, because we as a boxing nation, you know, we deserve to have what we have now, you know what I mean? Because we've 18 medals out of 34 medals ever won in the Olympic Games in boxing, you know? And it's right that we have the high performance and we have the proper facilities and everything else for our elite team and for our junior teams that are coming up as well. Because I'm not telling you a word of a lie, what we have now to what we have coming up is even better what's coming in the next phase of boxers, you know what I mean? So, and it's great for boxing, obviously. This pandemic hasn't been a help to anybody in sport, you know what I mean? But it's great that she can get the help with things as well. Even just talking to someone different, you know, she's going to be, our brain is going to be going at 100 miles an hour in the next couple of hours, you know what I mean? Because it's getting there, you know, she has to get back on the scales in the morning and make sure that's right. And that will be, that's no problem to her if she's making the 6 to 10 game, you know what I mean? But then, the next, you know, everything is getting closer to the free. And give her one trip, which I used to do. I used to not think about boxing about 15 minutes beforehand. I used to put my earphones on. I used to think I was the greatest singer in the world, but I wasn't.
What was your go-to song? Was it Sweet Caroline or something like that?
Oh, no, it was something like Stupid My Way. But it's very poignant. Well,
listen, you're live on Dublin's Talk and Sport. You can give us a few bars of it now if you like. I don't mind.
As a great Rocky Massey, I know he used to say, he says, "I can't sing and I can't dance, but I'll fight anybody just to be social."
Brilliant.
But she, you know, you hope that everything is... She's very cool. That's what one thing about Kelly as well. She's a very cool type of person, you know?
She seems to be very level-headed. She seems to be very grounded. Obviously, it comes from her background and her family and stuff like that. But,
of course.
You know, but she seems to be very, very level-headed. When you were in that situation, did you try and shy away from the excitement that was building up back home in your area, back up in Drimna or Crumlin, like, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm actually from Greenhills, but the boss is I didn't do too many interviews, you know. The journalist was given a client, and that was it. It was once a day, and he just wanted to talk to the boys. That's it, you know. The next thing, you know, it was great. My father was my coach, Nicholas Cruz, and you couldn't thank them too enough, you know. And Sean Hawken was one of the greatest managers I've ever been on a team with, you know. And they kept us just, you know, the way they wanted us. The thing with it as well was, I was with Wayne McCulloch, you know, and it was easier for us too than it is going to be for Kelly, because Kelly's on her own now, you know what I mean? Yeah. Although she has a team there, and I don't mean like the team are not going to desert or anything like that, but Wayne was winning, I was winning, Wayne was winning, I was winning. We got a little bloody competition going against one another, the two of us did, you know? Yeah. But with the, you know, the staff around you, you know, two great coaches there, John Conlon and obviously Zohar, there's a lot of experience there in Olympic Games as well. I remember, like, Zohar was in Katie Taylor's corner when she won her medal in London, you know. Yeah. So he's got a lot of experience there behind him as well. So he'll keep her calm and, you know, get her to do the right things, you know. So, but again, it's what her mindset is going to be like, you know. She's going to, you know, you're going to dream about the inevitable, what you want to win. You want to get that medal, you know what I mean? You want to get that gold medal, you think. But as I said, you know, it doesn't matter to me now with Kelly now. Mm. Whatever medal she wins now, she's an absolute hero, you know, to me and to our sport, and what she's going to do for our sport in relation to, you know, young kids wanting to join it from, you know, not just from inner city, but from everywhere around the country. They're going to want to join boxing, and it's one of our best recruitments by having a good Olympic Games. When we had a bad Olympic Games in Rio, we got cafe ostracized by everybody, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which was wrong, because when you see what happened in Rio and the corruption that was going on in Rio, it was wrong to wear boxers the way they were treated, you know?
Yeah.
And our association, you know?
Yeah.
So with that, you know, we've bounced back again and, you know, we've produced again. A fair play to the Rowan fraternity as well, coming out with the gold medal and bronze medal as well. Hoping we can match them, you know, and it'd be great for Ireland to come back now with another gold medal. And obviously, Aidan Walsh winning his bronze medal was phenomenal as well. So boxing is back on the charts here again, you know.
And I think it should be
rewarded for it as well, you know, man. So, and that's another thing down the line. But you know, we should get a reward for this. Boxing in Ireland is a huge sport, and it's mainly run by volunteers. Kelly is as good as he is there because there's a first day for the coach set up with a boxing club and a coach set up with a boxing stance in the whole nine yards. That's the one that should be rewarded, you know, that coach, you know what I mean, from the time she took it up, you know, and giving the instructions and the right way of doing things, those are the coaches that should be rewarded as well. Well, there's no doubt about it, there's huge excitement around the city.
The bunting is up everywhere. We're excited in studio, no doubt you are as well. Michael, it's been great chatting to you, really appreciate that. Hopefully we'll be celebrating a gold medal for Kelly in the early hours of the morning.
Okay, thanks Michael.
That's Michael Carruth there, our other Olympic champion, of course, giving us his thought on Kelly Harrington and the massive fight. 6 a.m. tomorrow morning that fight takes place. We'll all be up watching it, and no doubt down in Portland Row, like we said, they're the bunting up, the streets, the houses are painted, everything is ready to go. They're listening into this show, and we're with you all the way. We want gold medal for Kelly, but even if she doesn't, we're still very, very proud of her. We're going to take a break now. When we come back, it'll be horse racing. Don't go away. And you're welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport, with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie, here every Saturday from 9 to 11 with all of your sporting news. Someone's just texted me in a picture of Messi in a Dublin jersey, Ken. There you go. That's where he's going. It's all been sorted out. It's time to turn our attention to horse racing now. Delighted to be joined on the line by George McDonough, racing pundit and co-host of Over the Line Show. Good morning, George. How are you?
Good morning, Reggie and Ken. How are you, lads?
Good morning. Good morning, George.
I think you might know me. Did you play a bit of rugby with a few uncles of mine down that part of the world?
I played against the famous John Enderley, your uncle, Reggie. And one of the famed and people in rugby in Connacht, and one of the great gentlemen, as tough as cast iron on the field, or whatever you want to call it, rock solid, off the field, the gentleman. But for 80 minutes, Reggie, against him, you earned your corn.
Yeah, sure did. He had a head like a bullock, as they say down in that part of the world. You could be butting him for a while in the head and the scrum and you wouldn't come out the better of it. But he's in great form. I'll be seeing him next week. Fair play.
It was like coming up against Granite, Reggie.
That's it. Yeah, he still has that feel of him. Okay, listen, we better talk about a bit of horse racing, George. There's plenty going on, no question about it. You're kind of looking a little bit towards, where are we going? Cork, Haydock and Newmarket, is it?
Yeah, today the discharge are a couple across channel at Ascot, where they bring people from all over the world, jockeys and a couple of horses. To me, it's ridiculous. They'd be better off just marketing the good quality racing and just following what people want is high quality racing. I don't know why they continue this with Ascot, but there's some very good racing, and hopefully here in Ireland. We were fortunate enough in Galway last week to have 1,000 people plus owners and industry personnel at each day of the 7-day festival. Let's hope that we can gather up from the 500 that's allowed at the moment, because irrespective of your horse racing and greyhound racing views, they're great days and nights out, and it's great to get people back enjoying themselves outdoors. And I think when we're coming out of this pandemic, I think these sports are in for a huge boost. There's no doubt about that, because they're outdoor, they're family friendly, and people can have a good time. And look, if we can make a few quid along the way, lads, we'll do our best.
No doubt about it. The way things are going, sure, it'll be a full house shortly. The rules keep changing by the minute. We'll have to just get a few people, certain people, invited to go to the races, and then the next thing is.
I think if we had a race meeting in a certain parish in County Kerry, we'd have a great day.
Absolutely, be a great day out.
Hosted by the Healy Rays.
Yeah, give us a few winners anyway.
Few winners, lads. You're putting the pressure on me for four winners of the one day lucky 15. But look, we'll do our best, and we'll give you two that I think outside of the lucky 15 that might run as well as well. First selection goes in the 242. Again, this is the glut of racing we have on Saturday, these strange times to suit the TV satellite coverage. But the Platinum Stakes at Cork, over 7 furlongs. Now, current option was a hero in Galway last week, winning again for Aidan McGuinness and Gavin Ryan. Sets the standard here, but I don't see this race being willing to suit. And I'm willing to take a chance with number 3, Snap Criteria, from the Joseph O'Brien yard. This horse is dropping back in trip to 7 furlongs. This is what this horse, in my view, needs. Was a winner of a listed contest early in the season, beating Lusttown Baba, who franked the form at Galway, been chasing home Galty Mist to the listed Corrib Filly Stakes. 2 previous runs this season at behind Moffat at Royal Ascot was excellent. That was over 10 furlongs. And behind Japan had no chance as Leopardstown was making the pace. But I think the drop back to 7 furlongs, the easing ground underfoot, and I think number 3, Snap Criteria, around about 9-1, that will certainly, I think, give us a good run for our money. And Declan McDonagh can hopefully steer him home in a race where some of these have questions about their form, as possibly as my selection, but I do think that the drop back in trip is certainly going to suit, and I think Snap Criteria can start us off in the 242, the Platinum Stakes at Cork. Next up, we're going to the 455, the feature contest at Cork, the Group 3 contest, the Give Thanks Filly Stakes. It normally throws up a winner that progresses through the season. Thunder Kiss has been doing very well as a 4-year-old, and Frederico Sofia from Dermot Wells Yard was, I thought, slightly unlucky in the Munster Oaks behind Thunder Kiss. But for me, this is all about number 11, Willow. She dropped markedly in class again today. She finished 4th in the Irish Oaks behind runaway winner Snowfall. That was an encouraging effort for me because she didn't really settle for Wayne Lorden. And she was quietly backed throughout the week of that race, which told me that she was definitely going to give her running. Prior to that, she won the Oaks trial at Mace, beating another of today's rivals, Le Petit Coco. I thought snugly, the run of the Epsom Oaks, you forget, the ground was absolutely desperate on that occasion. She was eased totally when beaten, turning into the home straight. At 9-2, I really like the chances of Willow. I think this is the bet of the day. If you can sneak 5-1 each way, it's a cracking bet. And for me, Shelby Heffernan will get Willow home in front in the 455.
Okay.
Moving across channel, lads, we've got a Haydock. There's some good ways to get Haydock. The Rose of Lancaster Stakes, the feature at 4-10. Number 6 here, Real World. Isn't it great we're back into a Real World, lads, in a couple of weeks' time? Yeah. But 2 runs on turf this season. The first 4 career runs were all on the all-weather. Then won the Royal Hunt Cup at Royal Ascot, one of the most competitive races of the season. Absolutely on the drawn wrong on the far side, but still hacked up beating Astro King, who has since ranked the form. And I think Real World is the one to be on here. Since that, has upped in class and beat Derab in a good quality 10 furlong contest at Newbury, where there was a little ease underfoot. Some people will point that the softish ground at Haydock today might go against. I don't think so. And I think that Real World can land the spoils and hopefully be winner number 3. Whilst the 4th selection goes a little earlier at Newmarket. 4-runner race. Oisín Murphy, as we know, is carrying all the form this season across channel and has ridden something like 14 winners, I think, this week, including a 5-timer and a hat-trick. He rides Storm Damage for Saeed Bin Sarur in the Join Racing TV Now handicap. Just the 4 runners. But this horse, last time out, was a good winner, I thought, at Valiant Prince over this course and trip. Prior to that, and only 2nd career to start, finished a creditable enough 9th in Royal Ascot Jersey Stakes over 7 furlongs behind Creative Force, who has since ranked the form. His debut success was on the all-weather at Kempton, where he beat Thaler, who was well-fancied by the Stout team. I just think the overall form of this horse is progressive. Yes, he's got to give way all round, but Oisín Murphy riding for Saeed Bin Sarur, man in form, stable and in decent form. I just think this could be tactical, and I think this horse is more tactical speed than his 2 rivals.
Excellent, great stuff. Okay, that's a good solid lucky 15, some decent prices in there as well. You had a couple of 2 others that you said were worth noting as well.
Yeah, Reggie, I think that at Kilbeggan this evening, number 2 Darkened to say he caught my eye at Tramore was that he gave the outside up to nothing 3 runs ago, finished fourth to Jerren Mead. That was his first semblance of hurdle form. And since been beaten twice on the flat, including when quietly punted at Galway last week, looked to be taking a hand in the finish turning for home, but dropped away at Tamelick because he was on the outside in a race won by Plum Perfect. I thought that was a decent effort from Dennis Hogan's charge. 68 rating on the flat, surely to God is capable of winning a hurdle race off 95. There's not much depth, a lot of dead wood in the race, and I think this will have a decent chance. And also back at Cork, another horse that ran well at Galway, number 9, Petticoat Rule in the 317. She was beaten by Imposing Supreme, the only dual winner at the festival. Emphatic was second in that race. Those two are actually Galway specialists. Petticoat Rule cruised into the lead turning for home for the Gillian Scott team. Very, very eye-catching jockey booking today. Wayne Lorden gets weight from all arrivals. Off a mark of 69, I think at the prices she's a fair chance of running well.
Absolutely. Well, that sounds good, George. Really appreciate that. I'm looking forward to seeing how they get on over the next. I suppose you briefly. Did you get a chance to get over to Ballybrit the last day? Or
I was flat out working 7 days for local radio. Okay. Reggie, it was fantastic to be there.
Yeah.
But to see people that I haven't met racing for 18 months was the big bonus.
Yeah,
a lot of the general public hadn't been allowed. Some of us, we had a gathering of people in the betting ring. It was great to see friends that you have it. And of course, sadly, Reggie, there was people missing there that are no longer with us.
Yes,
it tells us how fortunate we are in life to be healthy at this time.
There's no doubt about it. One of my favourite spots. I grew up there every summer. Oh. I'd have at least a couple of days in Ballybrit, and I tell you, I learned a lot. No doubt about it.
And I think once you got your driver's licence, Reggie, you were probably on chauffeur duty to Headfoot.
Absolutely, you got that right. Yeah, and even maybe when I didn't have it.
You might have learned.
We'll say no more.
We'll say no more.
I lost a lot, Rich.
Exactly. George, pleasure talking to you. We'll catch up again sometime.
Pleasure, lad. Thanks for having me.
That's George McDonald there, racing pundit and co-host of Over the Line show, giving us all of those information. Just to give it to you again, the Lucky 15, coming from Cork with 2, Snapper Terea, 9-1 shot, and then the 455 Willow, in Haydock in the 410 Real World, and in Newmarket he goes for Storm Damage in the 4 o'clock, and then 2 to watch as well in Kilbeggan in the 545 he goes for Darkened, and in Cork in the 317 Petticoat Rule. So there are the horses. We're going to put those up on our social media channels and everywhere for you to have a look at, and you can do with them as you will. Then we're going to talk after the news at 10 with Shane Byrne about the Lions Tour, and Declan Drake will be talking GA. Don't go away. And you're welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport with me, Reggie Corrigan, and Ken Doherty in studio. With thanks to InsureMyVan.ie, we're here every Saturday from 9 to 11 with all your sporting news. And you can get in touch with us by texting us on 087 11 55 777 or WhatsApp us on 087 188 1068. We'd love to hear from you. It's time to turn our attention to rugby now, and of course the British and Irish Lions in the final deciding test in South Africa against the world champions. Delighted to be joined, as we have been throughout the whole of this series, by the one and only Shane Byrne. Good morning, Shane. How are you?
Good morning, Reg. How are you?
Morning, Shane.
Ken, how's it going?
We have him back. He's on a flying visit. We've brought him in here on loan. It's a bit like Messi going to PSG.
Yeah.
But look. There we go again, 5 o'clock today. It's one all between the two of us in predictions. You got the first one,
yep.
I got the second one. And I suppose, given what we saw last week, the weight has definitely shifted towards South Africa at this stage. Firm favourites to win this game now. Because, let's face it, it's been pretty damn poor from the Lions so far.
Yeah. Look, nobody could have predicted the way that game went. Like, you could have put, you and I probably would have lasted the pace in that game. It was so slow. The amazing stat, 65 minutes for the first 40 minutes of play, which is absolutely insane. The ref, I thought, was poor. I thought that he was whistle happy at ruck time, but you can't blame him considering what Rasmus had done leading into the game with that video he let out. So he was obviously going to be very strict and, you know, obviously not wanting to get involved. But what it created was this game full of frustration and, you know, unfortunately, a lot of TMO involvement. And it was just, it just ground on and on. And that's exactly what South Africa meant, because if you remember, or what they wanted, because if you remember the one thing I said to you, is that the reason I was still leading with the Lions was that I thought the dip was still going to happen with South Africa, the lack of international rugby that they had, the pace of the game was going to get them, like it did so drastically in the second half of the first test. But because they dictated the pace of the game to such an unbelievable degree that it was so slow, it never happened. And the really, really worrying thing for me was the simple fact is that you saw the Lions players, their heads going down. There were daft penalties given away, stupid things done in the second half, which only happened with fatigue and your head going down. And that should never, ever happen on a Lions tour.
The life was squeezed out of the game, though. Like I was watching it, like you said, an hour for the first half. I was watching the game and I thought it would never end. It was the worst display of, like, it's a big worry, you know. You made a couple of points there that I want to pick up on. I think they're very, very valid. You know, the referee was, you know, destroying the game because he was terrified about making a mistake and he was being scrutinised to such a level. From that, we've seen World Rugby have brought a case of, you know, bringing the game into
disrepute
against, against Razzy Rasmus. Do you think that's the right thing that World Rugby have done?
Well, you see, remember what I said at the time. I thought Razzy Rasmus was making a good point in the initial part of his video. He was dead right, because World Rugby do not have it right in the way the refs have to be answerable to the games that they ref. And the information on the do's and don'ts and the wrongs and rights of the previous game need to be with the management early, so not just when it suits them. So he was dead right in what he was doing and holding account. It was just, you cannot, within the structures of rugby, because we put so much emphasis on the referee and the respect for referee, you can't then spend another hour trying to have a go at the referee. You can't do that. That's just, he was dead wrong in that. So yes, World Rugby is, you know, right in what they're doing. It was misconduct. I don't think a lot should come of it. It should be just a point made of it, because a whole lot of this pointed the finger squarely at World Rugby, and they have to be answerable as well. They can't just go around going, "Ah, no, listen, everything is fine." Like, their structures are wrong in the answerability and the accountability of the referees on the decisions that they do make. But that should all be behind closed doors. It should all be within the weekend after the game, by the Sunday, that all of these discussions have already happened.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well, hopefully that will be it and it'll move on from there, because like you, I think it's just too much. Let's talk about the game, more importantly. It's been a poor tour, there's no question about it. Everybody's saying that. Is there a chance for it to redeem itself today? I mean, the changes that Gatland has made, if you look at last week's stats, to think that Dan Biggar passed the ball at out half three times in the entire match. You would do that in a normal game that we would have played in 5 minutes. So it's a bizarre stat, but he has rung the changes to try and, I presume, just play a totally different game against against South Africa. Do you think it'll work?
I think he did make the changes, okay, and you know, a lot of them fair play, but then you've still got to go, okay, if you're making changes, why not make other ones? Like, why is Randa Merva still there? You know, because he was poor under the high ball. So, obviously, South Africa are going to look at that and go, right, game plan, we're going to pound the ball down onto him, because he's not going to change in a week. Why keep Dan Biggar? If it, to the degree, if you're going to change the game, putting Ali Price in, which is great, for the speeding up the game, why leave Dan Biggar there? Why not put Farrell in, or even Finn Russell, flip the game completely on his head? If you're going to have him on the bench, he's no good on the bench. Put him starting. If you really think that you're going to have that kind of a game that he's going to be able to exploit, start him. Yeah. Put him out on the starting. Or bring a proven big match player, Farrell. Put him in there. The guy would probably do as well as him, because considering what Biggar didn't do. So things like that. And then, you know, right the way down, you know, okay, changes for change's sake, almost bringing more Welsh lads in the pack. I've no problem with Ken Owens, obviously. I think he's a great player. But so many players, when you go down through it, like, you know, Tyke Byrne, like, what in the name of God must he have done to not get a start and to be gone from 23? Like, Adam Baird is on the bench.
Yeah.
For one reason, because he was really good in the maul defence against South Africa A. That's the only reason he's there.
Yeah.
And
makes no sense.
If that's the case, start him.
Yeah.
There's no good in being good at defending the maul with 20 minutes to go. And as well as that, Gatland has been slow in using the bench. Like, Sam Simmons, like, is an amazing athlete. But do you not think South Africa are going to be able for him, you know, in his direct running style? You know, and then, as I said, with Finn Russell, like, if you're going to use him properly from the outset. Like, coming off the bench, you know, probably doesn't suit a player like that. You use him as much as you can and then have, have someone different coming off the bench otherwise. Yeah. You know, it's, you know, a lot done. But unfortunately, some of it just seemed to be a little bit haphazard.
Is he too blinkered with the Welsh? And here's another one for you. Don't think there's a person in the world who wouldn't agree that, you know, what Alan Wynne-Jones has done, he's the tour captain, coming back from his shoulder, amazing player, all that stuff, blah, 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 blah. But if you were to really, and he's done it before, Brian O'Driscoll is the perfect case in point, but if you were to really look at it and say to yourself, right, I'm going to make some changes here, surely Alan Wynne-Jones's position must be one that would be in jeopardy. And you might bring in a Tadhg Byrne, for example, in the second row. Or Henderson, who hasn't even got a look in. Or you put, you know, like, but is he too blinkered in the Welsh mindset?
Yes. But you have to caveat with, we all know he has made these decisions before, as you've talked about, and they have worked.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He has made these changes that we all gone, oh, for the love of God, what is that all about? But they have worked. Now, whether these changes will make enough of an effect, we'll yet to see. Yeah, Alan Jones has, you know, it's amazing stat. 12 tests on a row. He started over the three tours. And he, you know, to come back from a pop shoulder. And look, he was still battling Hardy, you know, all the way through the game. But the problem is, in a test the likes of this, battling Hardy is not what you want. That means, you know, if someone comes close to you, you'll do your job. But that's not what is needed. What's needed is a guy who goes hunting for it. And the man was out in his feet. He has to be.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, exactly. He absolutely has to be.
Tadhg Byrne, for example, that's his forte, is going hunting. We've seen the amount of times he's turned over ball from Munster and Ireland, and that's what he was good at. A second row playing as a back row, but also carrying ball and doing stuff like that. And with everything that Adam Wynne-Jones brings, and the huge respect that I have for him, you know, sometimes you might just have to say to yourself, will we actually need a different type of player if we're going to break down this massive South African defence?
You see, that was I always thought that there was going to be a flip-flop between the two styles. The Courtney Laws and Tom Curry, more physical styles, with the Tadhg Byrne and Watson styles, you know, which is terrorising at the ruck time, which Curry and Laws just aren't doing. And that's the thing I would have thought would have been utilised here. And, like, you're dead right in what you're saying. Like, everything we're talking about, like Alan Jones not starting, it's not an insult to him. The man is an absolute legend of the game, and he's amazing what he's done. It's just that something spectacular needs to happen. So, like, what the team need to do now is they need to absolutely resist everything they can do to make this game go stodgy. They have to tap and go. They have to quick, you know, run the ball, spread it wide, and non-stop. Just resist everything that South Africa will do to slow up this game. And that, to me, is the only way they're going to do that. Can this team do this? I don't know. Like, Ali Price is the right man for it, no doubt. Conor Murray, you know, there's no insult in that at all.
Yeah.
You know, Price just has his pluses. But can Dan Biggar implement that? I don't know.
And what about Bundiaki in the centre? It's a good combination with himself and Henshaw. Are we going to see a little bit more playmaking, do you think? Because
you would hope to see that. Yeah. Bundy obviously is known as a really, really physical, abrasive player, and, you know, crashing ball up as part of his game. But you can build a movement game in and around that. Like, to me, Bundiaki, it's a one game late. That should have been the centre partnership in the second test. You know, Bundy had deserved his run, and Henshaw, you know, bringing Harrison, I thought, was a mistake. It was just beating around the bush, where that should have been the obvious one to go with. You know, yes, they know each other so well, so there's no reason. Everybody underestimates the skill level that Robbie Henshaw has at 13, which is completely wrong. We all know he's a superb. He has great skill set. He's also superbly physical as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there is potential there to do all that you're talking about. You know, but can Van der Merwe do that in the wing when he gets out there? Josh Adams, we know his strike rate has been incredible. That's why he's there.
Yeah.
But there's other wings. There's Zamas and other exciting guys who you could have had in there. It's just, a couple of decisions just seem to be, haphazard.
If you look at the Ken Owens decision at Hooker,
yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, let's be positive here for a minute on it rather than trying to be negative on it. But, like, that's a good decision in my opinion because I think he's a better line-out operator. There's great line-out operators there. Itoje, Alwyn Jones, you've got Laws, Conan and Curry. Like, it's a huge line-out option. There's no question about it. So now you've got someone who can actually hit that line-out. So there's a place where we could get some really good first-phase ball I think, as you said, Ali Price is the right man to open up that up and try and get a bit of pace into it. The game plan has to be, if we have to have any chance this week, quick ball off the top, get away from those big forwards, run them around. As you said, last week they didn't get a chance to tire them out because the South Africans just slowed it down to a snail's pace and killed the game. Move it off the top, get everything quick ball out of the scrum and just run. Get the ball out to the wings. Move it to the likes of Adams and even bringing in Liam Williams from fullback. Just get some pace into the game and see what South Africa can do then. And then there's a chance of doing, as you said, on 60 minutes, them getting tired out and they have to unleash the bomb squad off the bench or whatever. But you're on the front foot then when you're doing that.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. It's the front foot rugby. You're dead right. Like, you'd love to just see, like, everybody would bemoan the fact that if they get the first line out in around halfway, they get the safe ball, they tap it down and it goes to bigger and it's just bombed. Like, and you'll see a collective from everyone in the Northern Hemisphere. What you'd love to see is a secure ball off the line out, straight from scrum half to Aki, say, crashing it up in the centre. Quick ball around the corner with a forward and then out the backs. You'd love to see something like that. Just expansive play just to keep it going. Because even if they did it for the first 10 minutes of the game, it would make South Africa think. Because they have a set defence that they're going to play to here. And it would just make them think for a minute, right, we're going to actually have to watch and see what happens here. Rather than get our back three ready and hanging back and ready for the bombs.
Yeah.
You know, we're actually going to have to bring them up into the line, which will create its own space. And listen, there's so many things we want to see from this game, and you got to remember, there's two very important people for South Africa in Steph Tatoi and Faf de Klerk. Missing.
Yeah.
They're very, very important players for South Africa. So there is, now the people who are coming in are obviously fantastic players, but there is an opportunity there. They will be just slightly disjointed. And if the Lions can start this game differently, as opposed to more of the same, it has to work to their advantage.
Yeah, Shane, how are you? I'm not a rugby expert by any shape or form, but to me, like, the first test, South Africa are very indisciplined. You know, I think they sort of copped on to that a little bit in the second test and sort of made amends. Yep. And to me, the Lions, just like what you and Reggie are talking about, they were sort of relying on the penalties and relying on the good kickers, as opposed to, like, listen, we're here, let's have a go. Like, let's run them and let's have a go. I know you've been talking a little bit, but if you were out there, if you were, like, leading that Lions group, what would you be saying to them? I mean, what would your game plan be?
It would be keep it going. Because one of the things, Ken, that you talked about there was the penalties that South Africa gave away.
Yeah.
One of the main reasons you give away penalties in top-class rugby is fatigue. It's just in that moment, your heart rate's gone through the roof, you're absolutely banjoed, and you just, instead of, not flopping down the ball, you end up flopping down the ball.
Yeah.
Or, you're sharp and you won't reach the handout where you shouldn't reach the handout. It's things like that. And what the Lions need to do is that they need to get South Africa to that level of fatigue.
Right.
And the only way to do that is to keep the ball alive, is keep it running, keep it in hand. And just keep it going so that through the phases, do multiple phases, even if you're going nowhere, even if their defence is good, keep them running, keep them moving, and then you could might throw in a little box kick or a group or through, something like that, because you cannot beat the South Africans if they're not tired, you know, and that the second test showed that. And this team, that is the main thing, you have to make them tired or forget about it, because they just revel in that slow, ponderous, ultra-physical game.
Yeah, there's no question about it. That's all we've time for on it. I could talk to you all day about it, Jane, but unfortunately we have to go to other things. I feel it's a bridge too far for the Lions. I just think South Africa are going to get there with that slow, choke the life out of a game plan that they seem to have. But I'm hoping the Lions can pull something out of the bag and come up with a game plan that'll bamboozle us and bamboozle them. Do you think there's any chance of that?
No.
Unfortunately, I think we're both going to be right in this one, Reggie. I think it's advantage South Africa. I really do. I think that what's needed from the start, or from the Lions, what I saw in late in the second half was the heads going down the Lions, and that is a huge, huge worry for a Lions series. And you know, there's a game plan they can follow, which will get results. And I just don't know whether they have the, you know, the ability or the hunger to go out and do it, which is incredible. I think it's advantage South Africa, unfortunately. Yeah. I'd love to be wrong.
Yeah, so would I. Well, time will tell. There's no doubt about it. Whatever else, with all the giving out and all of the, you know, sideline stuff that's been going on, it's still been an intriguing series. Yeah. And we are all coming down to the last one today. So no matter how much we give out, we'll still be watching it at 5 o'clock. All right, Shane. Correct. As always, great chatting to you. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Shane.
See you guys.
Cheers.
Take care.
That's Shane Byrne there giving us his thoughts. A big, tough, uphill battle, no question about it, for the British and Irish Lions tonight against South Africa. But it can be done, and they've made changes, so let's hope that those changes will ring through and that they can get a result. Okay, we're going to take a break now, but when we come back, we'll be talking GAA with Declan Drake and Sean Lane. Don't go away. And you're welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport, with thanks to insuremyvan.ie, here every Saturday from 9 to 11 with all your sporting news. It's time for GAA now. Delighted to be joined in studio by Declan Drake and indeed Sean Lane. Declan, I'll come to you first, because we were all full of hope last week and we were thinking, you know, things have been going well and there was a chance that we might get a result over Cork, but it wasn't to be, and it was disappointing in the end.
Certainly was, Reg. Good morning to you. I think you can sum it up probably in one sentence. Dublin's inability to get goals and Cork's ability to get goals. That was the ultimate thing. Particularly the second one, because it was just before half-time. We were 5 points behind in the game. Matty Kenny would have had a certain strategy in his head to relate to his players at half-time, and Sean as a manager could probably relate to this too. And once the second goal goes in, all that goes out the window, and you have to recycle your thoughts and that as well. So it was a big blow to the team. But look, they battled hard, but ultimately just fell that little bit short. And well done to Cork, and hopefully now they can go on and finish the job this year.
Yeah, well, you did get a few words from Matty Kenny, so let's have a little listen to that.
Yeah, at this level, like, you know it's going to be hard to win. Like, you know, if you want to win in pints, you have to hit over 30 pints to, you know, to have a chance. Like, you know, so you need to put a couple of goals along with 225, 226. You have to hit a couple of goals, you know, at this level, you know, to get your noses in front. Look at, we realise that, we understand that, and we're working on that. And look at, this team is going in the right direction. And as I was saying to another reporter there, like, you know, two good under 20 sides there coming now as well. You know, last year's one, you know, that played the All Ireland final this year, and this year's one. So there's guys coming through, you know, that we now got to work with and bring through, like, you know. And I believe that Dublin Hurling is on the way up again, and we just got to keep believing in these guys, keep supporting them. And look at, as I said, we appreciate the support we're getting from the Dublin Hurling public, and so I think they need to stick with the guys now. And like, you know, if we can prove on again next year, then we'll be right in the mix.
Yeah, you know, obvious disappointment there, Declan, with the loss, but a lot of positivity as well. And I think we've spoken about this before, you know, you've seen it with the footballers, you see it in every sport. With success comes the following, comes the, you know, the crowd, let's call it, that go with you. And as Matty said there, there's a good young crop of under-20s and of hurlers, and hurling is on the rise in Dublin, and there's a good support for it. So there's a lot to be positive about as well.
There is indeed, Jan. Another P word I would use is patience. I think we have to have patience with the project. We're 3 years into Matty's tenure now, and I'm sure there will be a review of it with the county board over the next few weeks. But my opinion, listening to what he was saying there and listening to him saying it on the pitch last Saturday evening at Semple Stadium, was that he wants to stay. He believes in the project himself and the quality that's coming through. We're not as fortunate as a Cork or a Kilkenny or Galway, maybe, in some respects, that they can have the success that little bit quicker. Now, what the reason for that is, I'm not entirely sure. But that's why I say we have to be patient, stick with the process, believe in the process, give it another year or two under Matty and see where we go from there. It'd be interesting to get Sean's opinion on that.
Sean?
Yeah, I'd say, firstly, I'd like to say that I'd like to see Matty Kenny stay. I listened to his interview there with Declan, and I think he's 100% right. If you compare the 2 years, last year we beat Laois in the championship. We were pretty poor against Kilkenny first half, made a game of it the second half, and bowed out very, very timidly against Cork. This year, it has to be said, we played Antrim when everybody were fancying Antrim, because Antrim had beaten Clare in the league, they'd drawn with Wexford in the lead, but we had a comprehensive win that day. The next one, obviously, was the big day in Croke Park with cameras and everything. We beat Galway 118-114, which is, you know, it's a scalp of one of the big top four. Galway at that time were the second fancied after Limerick at the time, so that was a great scalp. You know, we had the issues in the Leinster final with the COVID and young O'Donnell going off after 3 minutes, but we still gave a good count ourselves. I have to say, against Cork, before I go any further, I have to accept Cork were the better team on the day. There's no doubts about that. But Dublin got every chance to throw in the towel, Reggie, and they certainly didn't. I mean, Declan alluded to it there, a goal just on half-time. A lot of Dublin teams in the past would have. But whatever he said to them, they came out, they got a couple of scores. Cork, you know, gathered their senses again and went back up 7 or 8 points. And then Dublin rallied again with 4 smashing points in a row. And if you go back and look at the tape on it, at 71 minutes, Dublin had brought it back to 4 points. Declan did say, and I would agree with him, at that stage, had we Trollier fit and you know, could have ran the last back, you know, and got a goal, you know, the game was in the melting pot. But Cork were the better team, and look at it. But I think a huge improvement year on year from Matty, and I would just hope he stays on.
I think one goal, though, Sean, in 3 championship matches is the standout stat here. Plus 17 wides last Saturday evening. Some of them were very poor as well. But it was ultimately our inability to get goals in key stages that did cost us.
Well, certainly the last 2 games we got no goal against Kilkenny, and we only got no goal against Cork.
But the scoring rate went up from 19 points to 24 points. So that just emphasises the importance of getting the ability to get a goal or two.
Ah, yeah. Well, I think there's a stat in hurling that's acceptable now by all coaches that you need to get to 30 points. And if that's 30 points, which is the old way that Limerick were getting to it early on, it was good enough. But Limerick now seem to have changed their tactic. They kind of prefer to get 224. It's a lot easier. It's like, Reggie, in your game, getting a try or 2 penalty kicks. The try and the conversion still beats the 2 penalty kicks. A goal in hurling, they say 70% of the time it's worth 4 points, because it's a psychological blow to the team that concedes it, that the team that scores are usually on the front foot again when the ball's poked out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Okay, well, I mean, let's hope that, as you said, Matty Kenny will be there and the positivity continues and they continue on with the good form. Speaking of which, you know, the footballers did just that, a great victory against Kildare. Leads up to another meeting with Mayo next week. You caught up with Desi Farrell after the game. Let's have a listen to what Desi had to say.
We definitely look to bring more consistency across the quarters, and I think we achieved that today, you know. So without setting the world on a light, it was good to see a greater application across the 70 odd minutes. Mayo probably would be disappointed with their own first half performance. They looked exceptionally good in the second half, and no more than ourselves against Meath, I'm sure they'll be trying to bring consistency to their performance as well against Dublin. And you know, it's going to be a great tussle. There's very little to separate the teams over the years, and we're looking forward to it at this stage.
Yeah, it was a convincing win, Declan, it has to be said, but perhaps not maybe quite as high a margin as some might have thought, and also the fact that they didn't get a goal. But I know you're going to say to me, look, they went out to do a job and Kildare have improved, but did you see enough to see a team that are unstoppable in this All-Ireland and are going to go and take care of Mayo and then ultimately win the final?
I think I'll just leave that inevitable period of silence, which was the answer I was going to give you, as you rightly expected, sounding like a manager on the other side of an interview now instead of an interviewer. Yeah. Look, it was mission accomplished, step 3 out of 5. That's the way they're looking at it, right? They're Leinster champions for the 11th consecutive year, so you have to say, look, well done to the group on that particular achievement. We spoke last week about consistency of performance, Reg, during the programme, and I asked Desi specifically, was he happy with the improvement in the overall performance level from the Meath game? And his answer there was that he was, that there was more consistency in different quarters of the game. Now, obviously, there's still a little bit more to do. There's no doubt about that. But look, I mean, they're in an Ireland semi-final. That's where they want to be. Well, I was going to say a full house. Well, it will be in terms of what's allowed next Saturday evening, 24,000, I believe, at Croke Park. Another clash with Mayo. I mean, look at the games over the last 8 or 9 years, kicking a ball between them on some occasions. We've had an awful lot of luck, it must be said, in certain occasions against them as well. So whatever we're going to do, we're going to have to produce a more consistent performance again next Saturday to beat them, because their confidence is high after their Connacht final victory, which was in Croke Park as well.
Yeah, Sean, I mean, they're a bit slow, I suppose, is the way you describe it, with Mayo at the beginning, but they got there in the end. But they're showing, you know, an ability to play football, and with what we saw from Dublin, and as Declan said, job done, but maybe not the stuff that we've seen of the past. Are you concerned at all about the Mayo game? Or
I wouldn't be. I think that you have to look at the game both ways. I mean, we're not scoring as much, but certainly Kildare in no way threatened us for the year, for the whole match, and indeed Meath prior to that had a very good spell and brought to 3 points, and you'd say, okay, there's a game on here. But Dublin upped their game the last 5 minutes, even against Meath, and got the last 3 scores as well. So, look, I suppose they're doing enough, but I've seen Kerry teams in the past win All-Irelands like this back in the 70s, where they were written off and just getting through it, and then they came to the day of a final and they actually turned the whole thing and burnt the opposition off. Yeah. So maybe that'll happen this year, I don't know.
It's true, there's no point in playing your finals now at this stage.
No, I wouldn't like to be talking about Kerry too much at this particular stage. That'd be disrespectful to Mayo and indeed to Tyrone as well. But it's interesting how the psyche has changed. Dublin are not the favourites for the All-Ireland anymore. Mm. Right? So that puts the pressure back on the men from the kingdom and how they can cope with that sense of increased expectation. We're well used to it. We've proven it over the last 5 or 6 years, how we can cope with it, how they can cope with it. Well, that's their own business. We have our own affair to take care of next week first.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Well, the ladies have done well also. Of course, we feature them a lot here on this show, and they've reached the All-Ireland semi-final and a date again with Mayo.
Yeah, and the good news about that, Reg, is that will be the curtain raiser to the men's game next Saturday evening at Croke Park. Clamoured for it from the moment we knew that Dublin had beaten Donegal in the quarterfinal last Monday up in Carrick-on-Shannon, and thankfully good sense has prevailed, or common sense has prevailed. Doesn't always, but it has in this particular case. And 3:45 next Saturday afternoon at Croke Park, they'll take on Mayo. They beat them in the league semi-final a couple of months ago down in Limerick, and we've been on a very good run since, winning the league obviously in a couple of championship games. So Mayo would have been surprise victors in many people's eyes over Galway. So no more than the men's game, it's going to be a very interesting 60 minutes plus of football next Saturday evening, and really and indeed a full week out, looking forward to it intensely already.
Feels like a good squad though that the Dublin team have, you know. They have to be very fancy to take
the title. Absolutely. I mean, the important thing was, I was talking about the manager Mick Bowen 3-4 months ago, sitting by his phone waiting on the numbers to come up to see who was going to tell him they were retiring. He lost only one, that's Noel Healy. Everybody else has stayed. He strengthened the squad with the likes of Abby Shields and one or two other youngsters coming through who have slotted seamlessly into the system. So he's got to be very, very happy where he is overall at the moment. I know he wasn't happy with aspects of the performance last week, but they can work on that in training, and you can be sure come 3:45 next Saturday and we'll look more in depth at it next week, they'll be ready to go.
Sean, a cracking weekend of hurling ahead of us. I'll have 2 screens on at 5:00 today. I can tell you the Lions will be on one and the Limerick and Waterford match will be on the other. Waterford somewhat of a surprise package, it has to be said as well, but playing the hurling of their lives. And Limerick, we know what superstars they are, but there's quite a few people I've heard during the week saying that they wouldn't be at all surprised to see this Waterford team come in with nothing to lose and an attitude of having a go at this, causing a major, major upset.
Yeah, Reggie, you can't argue with that. They started off poorly, being beaten by Clare. They've regrouped, they've beaten Laois, just about got over the line, but after beating Galway and after beating Tipperary, they're smashing games. People now are saying that in relation to Waterford that it's their fourth game in a row. You know, that's a big thing, but it's not really if you're doing the right things for the other 6 days that you're off and resting and recovering, etc, etc. I believe they are. They have a smashing goalie in Sean O'Brien. I'll come back to the full back line because potentially I think Kelly, Prunty and McNulty, there could be a potential weakness there, and you know, but if you take the half-back line, the Lions and the two Bennetts, Jamie Barron is playing absolutely out of his skin, and up front, Desi Hutchinson, Patrick Curran, and also Austin Gleeson find his best form. You know, they're going to be hard beaten. They have a smashing game plan. They run with the ball all day. They never seem to tire. Big pitch, Croke Park will suit them. Having said that, Reg, they're up against Limerick. Limerick, you know, a half-back line of Dermot Burns, Declan Hannan, and Kyle Hayes. Who can forget the goal that Kyle Hayes got against Tipperary? Any forward would be proud of it. And you know, that's where the balls will be won, in the half back and half forward line. And again, equally, the Limerick side of Gerard Hegarty's half forward line with Keane Lynch and Tomás Mannion. I mean, that's a formidable line as well. And don't forget, Limerick are starting there in Galan tomorrow, which they didn't do against Tip, and it seems to put them in all sorts. But from a Limerick point of view, did they show a weakness by not being up for the third Munster final in a row, create great history? They weren't. But when it was put up to them, Reg, I can tell you, they came out the second half, and this is an amazing stat. They won the game by 4 points at the end, but Tip scored a late goal. But they were 10 points down at half time, and they came all the way back and had passed out Tipperary by the water break. That's some turnaround in a hurling match.
Absolutely, it is incredible. It's funny, you know, for me it's the opposite in my sport. I mean, to have 3 weeks, it's 3 weeks since since Limerick won the Munster final, and to have 3 weeks of a break going into a big game like that would be a disaster in rugby. Whereas, you know, I'd kind of be leaning towards the Waterford lads, where they've been on a roll of game after game after game. That would be my own personal thing, but different sport, different ways of doing it, I suppose. But
the thing is, Reg, people talk about the importance of good starts in games. Yeah. Tipperary, obviously, in the Munster final got it, but Christ, what a finish from Limerick. Yeah. At halftime, people are actually questioning.
That was unbelievable. 10 points, wasn't it?
Yeah, 10 points. But at halftime, some people are actually questioning Limerick. You know? They certainly got their answer in the second half.
There was no questions.
But
no,
I don't think there's a right answer or wrong answer.
Yeah, I know.
Whoever wins on this evening will say
the fresh legs
three games in a row did them the world of good, and if the other team win, they say the fresh legs.
You need to be in front after 71 minutes, not 5 minutes.
Yeah, okay. Well, then finally, we've only got a bit of time left, but of course the other huge one is Kilkenny against Cork. Kilkenny, I was going to say Kilkenny would be favourites for this, but it's hard to know now, really, because Cork are a quality side as well, but it's Kilkenny.
Yeah, look, Reg, Kilkenny, I know the game went extra time, but Kilkenny put up 237 against Wexford. Yeah. Now, a lot of people that were at the game, and I was at the game, you'd have to say that probably Wexford shaded it in ordinary time, but again, you don't beat Kilkenny unless you're a couple of points better than them. They put up 125 against Dublin. They've had a fair old break, but the one thing that always goes with Kilkenny, their in-house games in between are probably as good as any inter-county game. Mm-hmm. So they've had that. They'll be very hard beaten tomorrow, Kilkenny will. I mean, the forwards of TJ, Owen Cody and John Donnelly now is playing out of his skin, has made. I see DJ Carey's young lad has been picked to play wing back, which is a change on the Kilkenny team.
Right.
Kilkenny backs Deegan, Lawler, Tommy Walsh, you know, Parik Walsh from Tullerone. These lads know how to hurl. They know how to win close games.
Absolutely.
On the far side, you have to say one thing in relation to Cork. They have this tremendous pace. You have Jack O'Connor and Robbie O'Flynn in the forwards. Jack O'Connor from the Sarsfield Club and Robbie O'Flynn from Erin's Own. If these guys can create space, or if Cork as a team, as a unit, or as a, you know, can create space inside the Kilkenny 65-yard line, Cork will exploit that. But when you play against Kilkenny, Reggie, it's like a funnel. The nearer you get to the goal, to the Kilkenny goal, the more lads there are between you and the goal.
Absolutely.
So I just think that, you know, trying to beat Cork, we'll say, with a puck-out strategy might work, but Cork, we're trying to beat Kilkenny that way, but Cork might beat Kilkenny by turning over a Kilkenny attack or two and running at them all the way from the half-back line, as they did against Dublin in the last day.
Okay, well, it's going to be a cracking weekend no matter what way you look at it. I'm really looking forward to it. And we'll see what happens at the end of it all, whether it could be a good Cork versus Limerick in that final. I think that's what most people would be looking towards. Okay, lads, we got to go to a break now, and we'll be finishing out the rest of the show with Alan Cawley. Don't go away. 6.8. And you're welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport with thanks to insuremyvent.ie. Time for football now. Delighted to be joined on the line by Alan Corning. Good morning, Cawley. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Good morning, Reggie. How are you?
I'm wonderful, thanks. Wonderful. What a great week it was. Bose, I have to talk about it. 2-1 against Pack, is the way I'm going to pronounce it. But what a result. Absolutely incredible.
Yeah, it's been some week for the Irish teams in Europe, Reggie, and I was in the Aviva on Tuesday night, and it was just incredible, really, the atmosphere. I know there was only 8,000 people, but it certainly felt like more, and it's been some couple of weeks for Bohemians, but I think for all the teams as well, and they all deserve credit. Obviously, Dundalk getting a brilliant result away in Holland against Vitesse Arnhem as well. Patrick McElhenney getting a wonder goal, really. You've probably seen it. It's gone viral. And Shamrock Rovers then as well, getting a good result, beating the Albanian champions Tweta at home. So the fact that they're all in the third qualifying round, Reggie, and the fact that going into the second legs next week, they're all the games, everything is on the line, all to play for, and have an unbelievable chance to maybe get to a playoff round and potentially get to a group stage. It's just phenomenal. And the one thing we mentioned as well over the last couple of weeks when we were talking about the teams in Europe is the financial reward is the same as well, even though it's the Europa Conference League. So the money these teams have accumulated already is absolutely incredible. It's brilliant for the league as well. And obviously the recognition the league is getting at the moment, and the teams deserve unbelievable amounts of credit.
It's a great boost, isn't it, Alan? It's a real good feel factor for everybody, and it will filter down as well. That's the good thing about it.
Absolutely, Ken. Yeah, plenty of people want to knock the league and different things, and I'll talk to you every week about it, but there's serious potential in it, certainly when you look at the amount of the young players that are playing in the league as well, and putting them on that stage, it's like as if they rise to the challenge, Ken, obviously playing in the Aviva Stadium. I don't want to be critical here, but the facilities, as we all know, are pretty poor, and it's amazing when you put them on that stage, at that platform, in unbelievable stadiums and grounds, how much the players feel at home and rise to that challenge. So that's something that needs to be addressed here, that we all know is a major problem, is the facilities, and hopefully down the line it will. But certainly results like this and drawing attention on the league with positivity like this can only be a good thing.
Speaking of the league, there's some good games coming up in it as well. Derry taking on Drogheda, and of course we're looking at who else we've got. St. Pat's taking on Dundalk on Sunday.
Yeah, St. Pat's and Dundalk. St. Pat's probably are best served in terms of the league, Reggie, at the moment, because they'll want, obviously, Dundalk are in European action, so they might play a second string team or play a reserve team. Whereas Shamrock Rovers as well, the longer they remain in the competition, it'll be a distraction for them. So Pat's are not, obviously, in Europe. So in terms of them looking at the league, obviously, it might be a good thing for them if the teams can stay in the competition as long as possible. But it's a tricky game, obviously, away to Dundalk. Shamrock Rovers are home to Longford. You'd expect them to beat them. But I suppose all those teams will have one eye on the games next week because they've given themselves such an opportunity now. Obviously, there were major underdogs, Bohemians, going in against Pauk. But the performance, I was in at the game, they were brilliant, Reggie. They played really, really well. Keith Long has done an unbelievable job with such a young team and so much potential in that team as well for lads to go on and further their career and do even better things. And all the teams as well, obviously Shamrock Rovers are probably best placed, I would feel, to come through because the route they've gone, dropping out of the Champions League and getting a bye in the second round, they're much more favourable with the team they can get. And obviously they got the Albanian champions and they beat them comfortably, even though it was only 1-0. They're a much better side and they played well the other night. So they should come through, I would fully expect. It's a bit trickier for Dundalk and Bohemians. But because of the story and the way it's kind of gone so far, Reggie, and it's been such a good story over the last few weeks, I think one of them will come true out of the two. I don't know which one, but I just think this story is going to carry on a bit longer.
Yeah, I like that. The 17-year-old as well that came off the bench.
Brilliant, Ken.
Adomo, Maku, scoring. I mean, that must be fantastic. You put yourself in his shoes. He must have the world at his feet at the moment,
At 17, I was crying down the phone, I want to come home from Leeds.
You were saying, Mama, will you? Can I send my washing home to you?
So for the young fella to come on, and that's the beauty of this as well, European competition, Kenny, came on and that on that stage, and for him to score with his first touch, it was almost like a fitting end to the week because obviously we had the Bohemian story on Tuesday, Dundalk and Patrick scored that wonder goal in the 6 o'clock game, and then the Shamrock Rovers game was at 8, and that young lad coming on, as you say, his first touch, 17, brilliant. And I think that's, as I say, the potential that's in the league in terms of what we're trying to do with the national underage leagues and the academies. Bohemians, the same with their link up with Kevin's, have brought so many lads through that are playing on that stage as well. Shamrock Rovers, the same. So it's fantastic opportunities for the young lads, and long may it continue, Ken.
Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. There's very, very positive feelings going around Irish football at the moment in terms of the league and everything else that's going on there. Away from home a little bit, just quickly, I suppose one of your heroes and everybody else's as well, Messi. It was very sad news, I think is the way you'd describe it, to hear that he's going to be leaving Barcelona.
I'd agree with that, Reggie. I felt sad about it, especially in the world we live in nowadays, and it's so social media kind of dominated. For this to break in a tweet, the greatest player that we may have ever seen, and all that he's done and all he's achieved and the joy he's given to everyone over the last 10 years, for this just to break in a tweet and for it all to end like that, I just felt it was a bit sad. Hopefully they might be able to, obviously he's going to go to PSG, it looks like that's the only kind of club, I suppose, that it was looking like he would go to. Our city obviously spent all the money on Grealish, so
should it go, Alan? Myself and Ken were talking about this at the top of the show, we don't have much time to talk about, but should he not, with all the money he has, just kind of go, do you know what, lads, I'm going to spend 2 more years here and don't worry about the money, just pay me what you can,
and
you know, I don't need the money, I'll just finish it out as a legend for the rest of his life.
And I think there was talk of that when they were obviously looking for solutions, Reggie, that they were going to defer payments and pay it over 20 years or 25 years. But I would agree, like, money is no issue to him and or to any of them. So
he couldn't lace Ronaldo's boots, in all fairness.
Ah, stop, Ken, stop. We'll have this debate again.
We don't have time to talk about it, but he couldn't lace Ronaldo's boots, as far as I'm concerned.
Which, Ronaldo from Raf Arnhem?
From Renla.
I'm with you, Alan. I'm with you. I love Ronaldo. I love him, but Messi edges it for me.
Messi's the joy. Messi's the beautiful game,
No chance.
Yeah, but it's a pity, though. I just love if he came out and he said, you know what, lads, I'm going to stick where I am. And, you know,
he only uses his right foot for stepping on the bus, Reggie. You know, that's all he does.
I don't think the world we live in now will ever be like that, Reggie, where they'll just come out and say, you know what, we play for fun and for free. I think them days are long gone.
He's still making enough money, Alan. He's not going to be doing for nothing. He'd be making more money off endorsements. He could actually make more money if he did it the right way, you know, because it would be all about, you know.
He needs you as his agent, Reggie.
I need to go and work. He needs a new manager, that night. Definitely. I'll go and sort. I'll make him more money
Come back, Joe Harrington. All is forgiven.
You're just delighted your sidekick is back with you now, Reggie. Look, you're buzzing
today. Short lived.
It's good to hear. It's good to hear.
There is rumour of Messi in an Arsenal.
Ant and Dec are back.
Yeah, I don't know.
Brilliant.
No. I make some dick, no question about it. All right. Well, look, great chatting to you as always, Al. We'll catch up with you again next week and see how all of the SSC.
Yeah, hopefully the second legs go really well for all the teams next week. Yeah.
Best of luck to them all.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thanks a million, lads. See you later. Bye-bye.
Alan Cawley there giving us all his thoughts on everything that's been happening during the week. And it has been a great week. And indeed, the second legs, as he said, we're hoping that they will go the way of the Irish teams, and we'll have plenty more to celebrate and talk about next week.
Absolutely.
That's all we've got time for on this week's show. Thank you for listening to us on Dublin's Talking Sport here on Sunshine 106.8, with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Thank you to our producer, Jane McNamara, and for all her vox pops out and about meeting everybody. I'd like to thank all of our guests, and of course for Ken being back in studio. It was brilliant having you back in here with us again. We'll be back again next week, and we want to wish once again the very best to Kelly Harrington. Let's bring back
the
gold.
Come on, Kelly.